From Paul's house and Storm's house, it's Paul and Storm talk about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes, on average.
Oh, it's good to be back.
In like a lion. Hello, I am Paul.
I am Storm.
And we are going to talk about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes.
On average. Today is Monday, March the 2nd, 2009.
And this is show 030.
Yeah, another big round number for us.
A bellwether number.
Yeah.
I don't even know. What is a bellwether?
I can give you an answer, or I can give you an answer that's not right.
Mainly, I just wanted to see if you knew, the answer to that being no, you do not. Because either of us can know in about 20 seconds, thanks to the glory of the interwebs.
And you're probably well aware that, you know, I will never admit that I do not know something.
This is true. I know this of you. Nonetheless, we'll go look that up after we're done recording. Let us move to the big board.
Okay, at the top, I see that we have 137 certified minions in the Paul and Storm Brigade of Minions.
More on that in a second.
Yep. We are at 62% on the server fund. It's getting really exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Whedon Watch, no progress. McCartney Watch, no progress.
Yeah.
Poochie Corner, in which we discuss people discussing us. You can find the link on our podcast page at paulandstorm.com. It is com. Fabulous Lorraine.
Fabulous Lorraine, yes.
Who has written a very nice little story about a visit that we had earlier this week. More on that later.
Okay. Let's jump back to the minions thing.
Yes.
Because there's a development.
There is.
And this was your brilliant idea, so I will let you explicate.
So,
is that the right word? It's not, but I'm using it because I'm like that.
Well, much like that pet peeve word of mine that's misused constantly, comprise.
Comprise, yes.
Yeah,
Storm is a comprise snob.
I'm a comprise Nazi. And I say that if comprise can be twisted around for whatever purpose people want it to be used for, that explicate can be used however you want, Paul.
Mm-hmm.
So I give you license to redefine.
Okay, so let us explicate the development.
Okay,
in
minionhood. So at one of our shows this weekend, someone had purchased one of our new Paul and Storm Brigade of Minions T-shirts that has the evil organization's logo on it. And they were saying, oh, well, we want to take a picture of us in this and then caption it and send it in because it would be cool to, like, actually say I'm the minion wearing the minion shirt.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought that was pretty cool as well.
Indeed.
And the light bulb went off, and there is now a new designation among minions that anyone can qualify for, which is the Order of Tecloth. Where if you take a picture actually in the minion shirt and send that in indicating you are a minion,
yep,
you will get that text under your name. All yeah, those
so sort of
letters.
An added kind of like a cluster, an oak leaf cluster kind of thing.
And when we actually, you know, produce badges and have
uniforms,
sack races
yeah.
against the different regiments, that'll be a very coveted designation.
Now, we haven't discussed this, but yeah. I am inclined to say that anyone who has already submitted themselves as a minion cannot resubmit a new picture of themselves. They basically, you can't get this designation. If you already have something else. The reason I say that is, one, because it'll confuse the names of your, you know, we assign names to your minionhood based on the picture and what occurs to us at the time.
Right.
And also, just because I feel like being arbitrary, because that's part of the joy of being an overlord, is to make arbitrary random decisions like that.
See, my marketing lizard brain says we want to encourage people to strive for Order of the Cloth, because that means we will sell.
Well,
more
I think maybe there's something else that, it, like if you're an existing minion, and you send us a picture of yourself in your Minion shirt, we won't change the picture that exists.
Yeah, but
if you show us evidence of your owning the Minion shirt, then we will give you a Order of the Cloth designation. How's that?
Well, except I think it's nice that, like, you have to choose, like your idea, you have to choose to be in the elite core of the Order of the Cloth, or you can go for the self-expression ring and do something that's completely whatever you want. Like, you know, it's nice to be Order of the Cloth, you know?
But yeah,
at the same
true.
Time, if you want to be a space pirate who has a cat with no hair, that's kind of interesting.
Okay, well, then how about this?
All right.
Because the problem is, I also don't want to make this very much work for us. But how about this for an idea? If you are an existing Minion, you can resubmit as an Order of the Cloth picture, but your existing designation shall be removed.
There
for example,
go.
If you are, you know, one of the first 50 or first 100, you lose that and become what is currently are the super tardy doo-doo heads, or the super awesome tardy doo-doo heads, and you are assigned a new nickname.
I think maybe assign the new nickname. I think you keep your platoon, like, because that reflects when you jumped on.
Yeah, well, the other maybe we should have discussed this off the air, because the other problem is the gallery itself is organized chronologically, and this would totally fuck that up.
Well, okay, we're getting into minutiae. We're getting boring.
Okay,
here.
So the short version, we'll argue about this, and we'll let you know next week what our decision is on the topic. Nonetheless, Order of the Cloth designation shall be given to you, whether or not you are an. I think we can agree on that whether
yes.
or not you are an existing Minion or a new one, if you submit your picture wearing your Minion shirt, you shall receive Order of the Cloth designation.
Okay, are we ready for the fresh?
Wow, we're combative.
Well, what?
I like
what?
This in us.
Wait, was that combative? To
well,
say?
Not combative, but we're locking horns over concepts. Usually, we're quite agreeable with each other, ladies and gentlemen. And
on this one,
I have a feeling we have a firm difference of philosophy.
I don't know. I hadn't put much thought into it,
yeah.
So that's sort of the thing for me. And yes, I do like locking of the horns.
Yeah,
it can be entertaining.
Now, when you say that, it doesn't mean that you like the Lockhorns, the Saturday morning cartoon. With the drunk husband and the wife standing it with the rolling pin.
Wait, Saturday morning cartoon?
I'm not Saturday. I meant the Sunday Funnies cartoon, the Lockhorns.
Oh, you know, nothing. You will never hear me laugh quite as hard as when she, Mrs. Lockhorn, is standing there in her nightgown and she's got the rolling pin.
Yeah, and the rollers in her hair.
And Mr. Lockhorn, he's drunk.
Drunk bubbles coming off of him, and his nose is all crimson from having tippled a bit. Too and much he, down at the tavern.
And the caption is like, I can explain.
Or, no, you see, because he's more sardonic than that, so it would be something like, I can explain, but I don't feel like it.
Yep. All right, on to the fresh.
Yes. Anyway, on to the fresh.
On
what
the
you
fresh.
Got?
Not a lot, because I think we're going to talk a lot about one of these subjects here. I have Starfucker. All My Boners, which is carried over from last week and is not what it sounds like.
Uh-huh.
Paul and Storm Recommend, and Mr. Mustard.
Well, let's go right to Starfucker.
All right, Starfucker. Okay, so Paul and I had a brief discussion and decided we would rather have the discussion in front of all of you.
That's right, since we're airing laundry tonight.
And it's not a locking horns type of thing.
No.
But as we travel, and especially when we travel with our friend Jonathan Colton, increasingly we are coming into the orbit of and hanging out with... people of genuine fame, I guess, if that's a way to call them.
As opposed
them.
To our quasi-semi-internet fame, or Jonathan's genuine internet-based fame.
And we would love to, like... cut right to it.
Yeah.
How much is it appropriate to discuss the things that we do with these folks, you know?
Right.
That's it.
It's, right. How much is it appropriate from a privacy standpoint and from a you're annoying everybody else by bragging about all the cool shit that you did?
And I like
standpoint.
To think that some of these folks have become friends of ours.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Like, I do talk about things that my wife and I you know, do, or, you know, if we went to a movie or something, or a funny mm-hmm. story mm-hmm. and other friends. So I guess that's a place to start, is to yeah. say it's not like, I don't think, taboo or a breach of trust to discuss, you know, yeah. hey, you know, me and Paul McCartney were getting tacos and he wrote a song about it. You know,
that would be pretty freaking awesome, though.
Maybe that's our end with Paul McCartney.
Tacos with Paul McCartney is the front runner for the name of this podcast.
So I'm going to start the conversation with that.
Sure.
And then at this point, I figured you would have.
Oh, you'd bounce it to me? Okay. Yeah. Well, people who have listened to this podcast regularly would know, as has been implied, we've discussed it in the past. What an inverted, is that another inappropriate word? I don't even know if it's the right word or pronounced correctly. I am an enthusiastic starfucker.
Yeah.
And I have always, since a child, liked the idea of hanging out with cool, interesting, famous people. And amazingly enough, sort of the stars have been aligning rapidly, especially in 2009. Again, much of it based off of our reflected, you know, standing in the reflected glory of Jonathan Coulton as his profile yeah widens and his star ascends, but again those of you who follow us on Twitter and such know that this past weekend we got to spend some time with science fiction fantasy author Neil Gaiman, who has become, I would say, a friend of the band, a genuine friend mm-hmm. of the band, through mm-hmm. coming to see us in a Jonathan Coulton concert, and we had a really grand time. And here's an interesting story. Speaking of the whole privacy thing, I accidentally Twittered our dinner plans to everybody on
yeah,
Twitter.
It that worked was a, out.
Yeah, that was an oops. That was supposed to be a direct message kind of thing, and it did all work out. But that sort of it was like a little mini, little microcosm of the issues we're talking about here. Like,
in case you don't use Twitter, the way it works is you send these 140 character messages to people that subscribe to your feed, essentially.
Yeah, they call it microblogging. It's essentially the same thing as, you know, putting a post on your blog. It's just very short, and anybody can subscribe to it. And
there are a number of protocols you can use to communicate with everybody who subscribed to you, or you can send direct messages.
Mm-hmm.
So someone who was going to be coming to dinner with us had direct message us, and it goes to Paul's phone. And at that point, Paul
wasn't paying close attention. And so instead of sending a direct message back, I just replied to this message. And the way it worked through my phone, when you don't put a special little code at the beginning, is it just goes back to Twitter in general, meaning I just put a whole post saying, hey, come join us at this place at 6 p.m.
So we almost blew Neil Gaiman's cover.
Yeah, we totally did. But that's, you know, that's sort of, again, I'm one of the reasons I'm so fascinated by fame in general is when issues like this come around. I mean, you know, we have an extremely limited degree of fame. Right. And we can do things like sit on a podcast and talk about lots of personal things. Somebody like Neil Gaiman mm-hmm. Has a whole separate level of fame, partly just in the increasing numbers and partly just in the particular genre he's known for. As he put it, you get a particular type of crazy. You know, 99% of the fans are wonderful people, respectful of one's privacy, genuinely, you know, happy and interested and nice people, you know, just like with Jonathan fans or just about anybody else's. But then there's that 1% who, say, would make a pilgrimage to sacrifice an animal at your front door if they knew where you lived. And when you have to bear that kind of thing in mind, it's like it's, you know, it changes your life. That's, again, cliche and obvious. But really, you know, think about if you were to go through your everyday life and have to worry about, you know, somebody stalking you.
Well, except I'm not saying that it's not more difficult, particularly as you go up the fame ladder. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, even Neil Gaiman, he's done things that every, you know, people across the world know, but it's not primarily his actual face in front of it.
That's true.
But still, I kind of think of it as you were talking, almost like when you first get a cell phone. Or, you know, when you realize I have to lock my house,
mm-hmm.
at first it might be, oh, God, everything hinges on this if I lose my cell phone or, you know, if I give my key to a burglar or whatever it might be, and that at some point, if you've been at it long enough, these things become reflexive. Like, it's almost like you don't have to consciously think about, okay, I may need to make sure when I'm doing Twitter or whatever it is, and I'm very careful not to reveal any sensitive information. Like, we had this discussion, you and I, about how if we are going to talk about anything that we did with friends of ours who happened to be famous, to very consciously kind of pre-edit what we're saying to make sure we don't give away.
That's a whole new muscle to exercise, certainly for me at least, is to sort of think, you know, what's, you know, even beyond the whole, you know, and for all I know, there's a bunch of people out there right now who either stopped listening because they find this boring or whatever. Yep. But, you know, for the people who are listening, just, you know, for the purpose of this discussion, it's like, okay, what can I talk about here? That's, you know, to think about your activities that way. And it's new and just a fascinating aspect of our increasing circles of influence here.
And I always get uncomfortable doing it. I'm not as much of a star fucker as you are.
No, you're not.
And the thing is, I really enjoy being around people that whose work I admire and who I, you know, I feel like, you know, I get what they're doing and it's exciting to talk to them.
Yep.
And then finding out, hey, they're just really cool people to hang out with. But I do feel kind of funny about it.
It's a little weird. And there was, you know, with me, again, because I'm more enthusiastic about it, bear in mind, you have people out there who want to be like Paul and meet lots of famous, interesting people. I probably spent a good 10, 15 years learning how to do it. Mm-hmm. Like, screwing it up.
You're very good at it.
Like, you know, one of the things... again, we hanging out with Colton, we see a lot of enthusiastic fans take different approaches to try and, you know, be with Jonathan, whether it's just for signing things after a show or what have you. One of the things you have to watch out for, and it took me a very long, long time to learn, is to not get a case of the try too hards.
Yep.
And I look back on, you know, the me of my 20s and early 30s, and I just want to smack myself in the face, thinking I was being clever and cool and interesting, you know, trying to approach various people and be cool, quote unquote. And it's just, oh, I'd make myself cringe. And I have sympathy for people when I see it, you know, when I watch it happen to, you know, Jonathan or whomever. You know, you just, you know, play it a little cooler, please.
Not only that, but it's not just... you have to be able to recognize what a particular person's boundaries are.
Excuse me.
And then you have to respect them.
Exactly.
That's not to say that, you know, you can't approach people. I mean, certainly there are the Michael Jacksons don't look at me type.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think that most folks want to interact with people, but... famous people, that is, want to, but are afraid, you know, that the boundaries won't be recognized.
Yep. That's always the worry. That being said, I can at least speak for myself. I still get a huge charge out of whenever we get recognized. Usually it's within 100 yards of a venue.
Yeah.
And I think it's really cool. I'll be sad if we ever hit a point that officially becomes annoying.
Yeah, I will too.
To me.
I will too.
But good problems to have, right?
I hope that day comes.
the 10-minute mark was 8.5 minutes ago.
Wow, and we've been on this subject for a while.
Yeah, well, you know, it's one near and dear to our hearts. So, you know, if you don't like it, turn off the podcast. But that being said, let us move to another topic. What are the other topics you had there?
All My Boners, Paul and Storm Recommend, and Mr. Mustard.
All My Boners.
All My Boners. This is about things that you've done that have just embarrassed you. And
like trying too hard to impress a famous person when
yes.
you meet them. So they'll think you're cool. See, it all ties together.
That's exactly the kind of thing. Like, I have this freelance gig I do at a TV station, and it's only 2 miles from my house. So I make this walk that is exactly 36 minutes. And on that walk... I don't carry an iPod. I just think. I generally think. And more often than not, in the mornings, I find myself dredging up all of the most embarrassing things that I've ever done in my life. Not just like within the past week. Usually it's not even recent. I'll remember something from high school. I'll remember something from third grade. Then I'll remember something from college. It's like they say, you know, some people say when you die, you relive
your life quickly. Flashes before you, etc.
Right. Or maybe you're judged by whoever you believe will judge you, and they replay all of these moments of your life. Well, I'm getting them now.
You're just getting some previews?
Yeah. Maybe I'm dead. I could be dead.
Maybe.
So anyway, I thought maybe I could share an example of that.
Go right ahead, please.
See what you have, Paul, I'll share an example and then we'll go. This was from junior high, and there was a girl named Stacey Harris who was one of the uber cute girls that all the guys had a crush on.
Right.
And really smart and all the rest. So I wanted very much to impress her.
I totally have a picture of Stacey Harris in my head, and I guarantee you it's nothing like what she actually looks like.
What do you think she looked like?
Blonde hair down a little past her shoulders, bangs, sort of a light blue greenish eyes, a little bit of freckles, and about 5'5" or 5'6".
Way off. She had long, sort of light brown hair that was pretty long. She didn't really have freckles. Frankly, I don't remember her face that much. My change in the women's changed
a lot.
Well,
you have yours and I have mine.
Right. So anyway,
I'll stick with my vision.
Picture her the way you would want Stacey Harris to look.
Right.
And so we were taking the same shop class at the same time, making these little paper clips that look like ducks. All right. I remember that well.
Okay.
And the whole time I was looking for an opportunity just to talk to her.
Yeah.
And I'm still not good at social interaction. It's been a learned behavior for me.
Sure.
So I basically hovered nearby, and I overheard her talking with her friend or whoever was next to her about the waxing and waning cycles of the moon.
Mm-hmm.
And I was taking a science class at the same time and thought, aha, I can provide my awesome smartness to
conversation. There. Yep.
And I offered that, waxing is when the moon is in descent and waning is when it's on the rise, which, of course, is completely opposite of what the truth is.
Uh-huh.
And the two of them just stopped and looked at me. And it turns out they weren't talking about the moon cycles at all. They were talking about something unrelated, and I just thought I had heard that.
and you just came out with a random and incorrect fact.
Yes. And
that hurts.
Oh, it was a dagger to the heart. And if you ever seen the old Charlie Brown cartoons, not the ones that are in the paper now, but the old style drawings where he would sort of become flushed and then he would get a little crosshatched dark cloud over his head.
Yep. And he'd walk away with the dark cloud and he'd be bent over.
Yep. And Snoopy might be there looking at him, you know, with a blank face.
Right.
That was me at that moment. And I do these things every day.
I laugh at the young you.
So anyway, that's sort of what I'm talking about. Do you relive
this kind of thing? I think that's a lovely topic for people to share about. Tell us about the things you beat yourself up, yourselves up about, the dumbass things that you did that you cannot ever change, unfortunately.
And I could, you know... Now, I don't want to do this because it would be too painful, but I could do this as a regular feature on every show.
I bet you could.
Do you relive that stuff?
I do. I really do. I don't do it as regularly as I used to. But yeah, that stuff comes up for me pretty regularly. I, of course, can't really think of any particular examples. Yeah. The one I can think of off the top of my head relates back to the Fame thing. We were fans of a group out of Canada called Moxie Fruvis. who was sort of an inspiration for our old a cappella band, Da Vinci's Notebook. And we sort of, you know, collectively struck up a friendship with them. We opened for them once or twice, and we'd like get in to see their live shows when they would come to town. And it started to become a thing where we would, like, we'd get comps from them, but we always felt like we wanted to give them something. So I would bake cookies or brownies or something, because I know how much it sucks to be on the road and eating, you know, chips out of a bag and
sometimes
and crappy sodas.
Sometimes we would give single malt scotch, hint, hint.
Yeah, yeah. And I just remember one particular show in Baltimore. This was relatively late in our in their career path before they stopped touring and broke up. Went on hiatus, and I made cookies for them, and I sort of, you know, went up to the dressing room, semi-invited, and handed off the cookies, and then, and this was one where, like, it was just me, like, usually one or two or three of us would go, on this one, for some reason, it was just me there, and I just wouldn't leave, and I look back on the entire conversation, and I see all the hints they were dropping.
Yep.
And trying to sort of figure out a way to get this
the awkward
idiot
conversation
out of their dressing room. And I just, I don't know what it was, but I just would not leave. And I knew as soon as I left, actually, that was the moment I started reliving it, and I haven't stopped. And it's got to have been 15 years at this point.
I'll tell you why it was hard to leave. Because you knew that, you know, if you were turned away at that moment, you probably had a vision in your mind that you would go and hang out and just be among them, you know?
Yeah.
And that what you were hoping for just didn't match up with what was happening. And it was hard to let it go.
You're exactly right. I was clingy. Then that's, you know, again, gets back to the topic we were talking about before, sort of figuring out, you know, when enough is enough, and when you try and it doesn't work, don't try and chase after a ball that you've already struck out on.
And that's really like the scenario that I had, and that is common of what usually gets me into trouble. It's sort of the same thing,
where you feel like a pretender kind of thing,
like a pretender, or you feel like, you know, you're not sure what to say or do, and end up, you know, going too far, or you make the wrong choice, you make a flustered choice. So I think the advice, you know, for me or and people that do stuff like that is, when unsure of what to say, just don't say anything at all.
Say nothing. Yep.
Although it's not always an option.
Let's do a quick, not to, and I'm just looking at the time, not that we want to go terribly long. Let's go with the Paul and Storm recommend, a now semi-regular feature that we're trying to work in to use our powers of influence for good.
Yes, this actually came from, Paul had asked the Twitterverse, the hive mind, for book recommendations for, you know, all the downtime that we do both occasionally have.
Yes.
And one of the authors that consistently came up a lot was John Scalzi.
Have you looked up that pronunciation? I'm assuming that's correct, but I'm never sure if it's supposed to be Salzi or Schalzi or Scalzi.
In Italian, it would be Scalzi.
Okay, we'll go with that then. The interesting thing, just to tie it all back around again, this was 5-6 months ago, or I think I'd asked for that recommendation, and it sort of it went by. I'd gotten another book at the time, and then we did a show in San Francisco a few months ago, and one of the people who won prizes, you know, we give out silly prizes during our set. One of the people who won prizes, it turned out, we didn't know at the time, was John Scalzi, the author himself.
Yeah.
And somebody mentioning that on Twitter reminded me, and I said, oh, yes, somebody recommended his books. Who should, you know, which ones should we get? And he actually recommended one or two. So, and now I take it back to you.
And I hate this. Like, I didn't know who he was at the time.
Yeah, me neither.
He is a science fiction author, and I would say clearly in the science fiction side of things.
Yeah.
And I've always imagined and do imagine that someday I will start writing.
Mm-hmm.
And science fiction is of interest to me.
Mm-hmm.
And that timetable has probably been kicked back a good 5 years, because all of the really cool ideas that I thought I was going to weave in with my characters, he's covered them all.
Yeah.
Stuff about what is, you know, the human consciousness. Can it be transferred?
Right.
And what is the nature of being human versus any other species? What are the possibilities based on the technology we know today? Really, it's what science fiction has been doing for since it's existed.
Mm-hmm.
But he has really mined a lot of the newest developments and done it in a way that's interesting. He creates these great worlds that you get to just sweep right through in these
And most
books.
Germane to our discussion, basically, he's written several books that you have read and immediately wished that you had written.
Exactly. But I'm going to get there because the characters I have still live in my mind. They just might be doctors now.
There you go. Yeah. So I'm sure plenty of you out there already are familiar, but if you are not familiar, you could do far, far, far worse than read some John Scalzi. I myself, while I enjoy reading science fiction, but I wouldn't consider myself a voracious science fiction reader. A lot of times it just turns into an army of, I mean, not an army, a mass of made-up alien names and technology yeah. things go whizzing by that I just turn into a blur. But these are very enjoyable, highly readable books.
And thought-provoking.
Yes.
And thought-provoking. It's S-C-A-L-Z-I.
Yes.
I think we've done some good work here.
That's a good stopping point. Yes. Good on you, Storm. You've done well today.
You too, Paul. I'm proud of you.
And let's see, where are we going to be? We're going to be in Ann Arbor, Michigan. That show is probably very close to sold out, but this Friday, March 6th, we're going to be in Ann Arbor. And then on the 13th, we are going to be in, I can't read it from here. We're going to be at the House of Blues in Houston, yeah. Texas, with Jonathan Colton. And then on Sunday the 15th, we're at Antone's in Austin, Texas, during South by Southwest. So come say hi. And then on Friday the 20th, we are in Bay City, Michigan. So lots of fun stuff coming up. Check out the website, paulandstorm.com, for all of the details. Everything, Storm?
Yeah, go to the podcast page to become a minion or to contribute to our financial well-being, which we always do appreciate.
Absolutely. That being said, I am Paul.
I am Storm, and we have been talking about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes.
On average. That would be that.
Go do things.
When he walked into that kitchen, and the chef picked up the odor and put down a soldier Nixon. He said, "Make yourself at home, boy. I just rewarmed all the griddles. Got 20 minutes starting now.
Create some gourmet vittles.
Basil and thy parmesan, shrimp, live lobster, hamster, Worcester, Munster, caviar, ricios, no bees, campy, roquefort, beans, curd, blue beef, fennel, pork, ox, side flanks, cantaloupe, sheep, steak, provolone, flatbed, goats, and soup, gruyere, cheese, and hair, peas, and a beef, cheese, squaws, and a cabbage, and a crawfish, claws.
Woo! Yum, yum.
He was just some Johnny Sauce fan when he walked into that kitchen. But a genius with the booze stuff's got the old chef's taste buds itching. Johnny Sauce fan bought the restaurant and the chef came all on blue.
But there'll
always be a lineup for that strange and wonderful food. Basil and I, parmesan, shrimp, live lobster, hamster, Worcester, Munster, caviar, ricchio, snow peas, scampi, roquefort, meat, square, blue beef, fennel, pork, ox, side flanks, cantaloupe, sheep, steaks, provolone, flatbed, goat's head, soup, gruyere, cheese, and hair, please, and a beef, cheese, squaws, and a cabbage, and the crawfish claws.
Thank you.